Hello everyone, welcome back to PW Ponderings coverage of Pro Wrestling Guerrilla's BOA 2014. It's been a long 3 days, nights, just so much time, but it's been a lot of fun, and obviously we appreciate everyone who has listened to our night one and night two recaps. This time though, Jerome and I, we didn't want to do it alone. We brought along our PWG expert, Brian, of course, who is the man tweeting all the results and always gives them to us. And Brian, man, I know you didn't get a chance to talk about night one, night two with us, so why don't we take that time to kind of go over it. Night one, when you and I were talking about it, you kind of said it had the feel of a PWG show, where night two was kind of felt like the G1. So why don't you go into your overall thoughts of night one and night two?
For sure, because, you know, night one started late as usual, like a typical PWG show. It got out late, you know, long matches here and there, but night two definitely had the better pacing, that's for sure, because it had better, like, 10-15 minute matches, and the pacing was better, and night one was still long in the tooth, but night two was definitely the better paced show. Definitely the match of the weekend, though, was definitely on night two, I gotta say, even with night three already done. ACH and Kenny Omega was just tremendous stuff. I mean, only in PWG where you see the battle of the Kamehameha versus the Hadouken, out of all things. That's Street Fighter versus Dragon Ball. That's a nerd fantasy right there. But of course, I'm the only nerd in the room at the moment. So
no, yeah, I know what they are. It's actually Jerome, who has no idea what a Hadouken is.
Oh, okay, it's Street Fighter. But yeah, that was awesome. Night one. It's what you expected, you know. I mean, the match between Tommaso Ciampa and Michael Elgin was some disgusting
something stuff. We have to discuss, because we didn't talk about it, and I felt so bad that we missed it. The testicular claw, Brian.
Oh, God. I just forgot about that until now. That was, right? Okay,
I'll set it up for listeners. So, basically, I believe Michael Elgin had Ciampa up for a vertical suplex. Ciampa reverse, comes down, and just grabs him by the balls. So we get the standoff where Elgin's hitting him in the face, but every time he responds, he doesn't punch him back. Ciampa just squeezes harder, and the fans, I mean, hey, male-dominated crowd, we all felt it.
Yeah, that was that was quite something. Tommaso Ciampa has no fear, apparently, especially after tonight. And
right.
He's
gross.
He's gross, and he is not afraid to even explore Chuck Taylor's ass, apparently.
And even in slow-mo, which that's a little bit of a teaser for something just awesome that happened tonight. But yeah, Brian, night one, I don't know how familiar you were with Zack Sabre Jr. coming into this, but I think his first night in, he really took over the crowd.
That was something special to watch. I mean, I've seen him a couple times. I saw him on some of that footage from him in that match with Devitt on free on YouTube, if you want to check that out right now.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, I saw him in Chikara a couple years ago when he was really, really small, and he entered a High Flyers tournament stating that he's going to win with an armbar. So that's all I remember from Zack Sabre Jr. Now I see him now, he's bulked up almost twice as, you know, the size he was before, and then he's just got this crowd control like I've never seen it before, where it's just like he's doing all this technical stuff, yet he's got control of the crowd. It's really
so smooth.
It's really smooth. It's right. Really beautiful to watch, and just that intensity he brings with the especially those European uppercuts in the corner. Those
Jeez,
were some
damn
sick, disgusting European uppercuts that remind you of like Claudio Castagnoli and Dory Funk Jr.
And it's that one, also the other spot they does where he runs across the ring, hits those turnbuckles as hard as he can, and there's no one there, folks. I mean, it literally sounds like he's going to break the ring, and he runs back at his opponent and just nails them. It was
tremendous. Especially that match, considering that going in, the crowd had really no idea who he was.
Right.
And then by night three, you got at least 15% of the crowd wearing his t-shirt, which I found very, very interesting.
I mean, talk about night two, Brian, him versus Adam Cole. I think that probably, if not, it met expectation, and I think it surpassed it. I don't think anyone knew what was going to happen.
Exactly. I think people were thinking, oh, it's going to be Adam Cole, you know, doing his shtick, and he's going to get the heel win at the end, cheating or something like that, and that's what it seemed
like.
I
said it was going to be Zack Sabre Jr., by the way.
That's Jerome coming out of the shower. He's got clothes on, don't worry. Awkward.
Very.
But, that match was sweet because, I mean, it seemed like everyone wanted Adam Cole to lose in that match. And everyone maybe figured, well, Adam Cole won Bola before, he'll just go into the next round, you know. But it really just shocked everyone when the O'Connor rule came out of nowhere and Zack Sabre Jr. advanced, and the whole crowd got behind him, and, you know, Adam Cole got sad and whatever, but definitely a star-making performance by Zack Sabre Jr. this weekend.
That's an overall point that we probably will be discussing after we talk about Night 3, just the fact that Mount Rushmore, just kind of like an afterthought this weekend.
Yeah, lost in the shuffle a little bit. I mean, they did get a few wins this weekend, but you would think, you know, with the big angle that ended Bola last year, that they would end with a big angle this year with Mount Rushmore or something like that to make it full circle. But no, because, I mean, originally I was predicting someone in the end was going to join Mount Rushmore and replace Kevin Steen, and I was thinking it was going to be Trevor Lee, because there were some subtle hints to that notion, but wasn't really, you know, fulfilled. But, you know, overall, I think, you know, Mount Rushmore will still bounce back from this. I think they're kind of focusing on Roddy right now in terms of the heel heat, so Mount Rushmore is just kind of in the back burner, but I think somehow these storylines between Mount Rushmore and Roderick Strong are somehow going to intertwine. I haven't figured that out yet, but it seemed like they were going to do it tonight, but they didn't, so.
It did.
Yeah, but, you know, Mount Rushmore will always bounce back. I mean, they're still hot with the crowd, so. You know, and then, you know, the tag match last night between Daniels and Kazarian and the Young Bucks was pretty good as well. I guess we're going to see some regular appearances from Kazarian and Daniels now. So,
hopefully. What do you think about Red Dragon, and particularly the idea that, you know, it's Bobby Fish, he's very closely tied with Kyle O'Reilly for obvious reasons, but Kyle O'Reilly is the PWG World Champion. He's a singles guy in PWG, so do you think that dynamic works? Do you want to see more Bobby Fish in, but in still more of a singles role, like he is a Noah, or do you want Red Dragon to really be a thing?
I think Red Dragon is going to stick together in PWG, it seems like. I mean, they got that natural chemistry anyway, so anytime, you know, Kyle O'Reilly needs some backup, Bobby Fish will be there. But except tonight, Bobby Fish was a little late for the save, but
He was stretching, man. He was stretching. Quads, you know, you gotta.
Exactly. Plus, all those people standing in the front of the entrance were blocking the way anyway, so. Yeah, Red Dragon, man. I think we might see a deep run from them in DDT4 based on the tag match from yesterday, which was excellent, by the way. That tag match between Biff Busick and Drew Gulak against Red Dragon was just some intense stuff. And I love Drew Gulak and Biff Busick's style of old school, hard hitting, no knee pads, you know.
Right.
Throwing, you know, throwing suplexes all over the place with forearms and stuff. It was great to see.
And I gotta put this out there, that fan, like, or, you know, just one, it was like one or two fans that said it was boring. Like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
That was wrestling between Fish, O'Reilly, and Busick and Gulak. That's what wrestling, I mean, that's the wrestling I love.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I wanted 100% of the time, but when you get that kind of chemistry, that's, I thought it was fantastic.
For sure. And we're probably forgetting some other things. Let's just look through the notes really quick. Candice LeRae getting 2 wins over Rich Swann. That was really something. You would think with the booking in Night 1 that, you know, Rich Swann would get that win back. But I guess it was more of like a red herring.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Candice LeRae beat Rich Swann twice. So that's something. You know?
She's kind of over. You know, little, you know,
she's kind of over.
Yeah.
Kind of.
That's a little bit.
But, yeah, Candice, you know, making looking like the star she is this weekend. But I don't know. I know this sounds bad, but it seems like Joey Ryan's got the shit end of the, you know, like a
right.
The bargain in the tag team. But
given what his history is, I mean, former world PWG champion,
right?
And you know, the dynasty. I mean, I'm not saying the PWG fans don't appreciate him because they clearly do. But Candice,
she's the star. She's the star. So, I mean, you know, there's no way. I mean, a singles run with Candice is, you can do it, but Joey Ryan there just helps out, because I mean, Candice excels in tags anyway, so
right.
It was really nice to see her in the singles role this weekend, but yeah, I think she excels well in tags, so I think her and Joey are going to have a nice run, and yeah, some really interesting stuff this weekend, so
and she's had her chances, let's be honest, she's had her chances.
Yeah, for sure, so. And then I guess another thing we got to mention, Chris-Hero Masvidal, they, I guess their cardio's getting back together, I guess, especially Matt Sydal.
So. Yeah.
Matt Sydal, I watched that Dragon Gate match, that tag match between him and Seema against Ricochet and I think Masato Yoshino, or I might be getting it backwards, but he didn't seem like up to pace on that that particular match, but he seemed to get some of it back here, so I think some of his ring rest is wearing off, so it's nice to see Matt Sydal back in the saddle again, so. Just a shout out to Matt Sydal, you know, for coming back to PWG after all these years, all scruffy bearded and all. So,
one of the people in this room is not a particular fan of his hair. We'll just leave that in the dark. So,
by the way, Roderick Strong's hair is still immaculate.
Yeah, Matt Seidel's hair is a hot mess, and we really need to have a conversation about that.
That's what we do here at PWP. We give fashion tips. Come on, that's what we do. But yeah, I mean, in terms of anything else from night one, I mean, obviously Elgin and Ciampa, that for me was one of, you know, my favorite matches. Brian, what about the former Curt Hawkins in PWG? You know, we kind of saw him run the gamut this weekend. He was not really liked, and then kind of liked, and then...
I mean, he's got some good moves, he's got some good move sets, but that ending really just soured me.
I think it soured a lot of people. It just...
Maybe we're just a little too ambitious on the ending, coming up with a cool ending, but the way that ended just really didn't settle well with some of the fans. So
I know you did a podcast with the Indie Corner. Did you agree with Jerome and I that probably the finish was going to be attempting the Hurricane Rana, it reverses into a Styles
Clash. That's exactly what I was thinking, like that was going to happen that night, but this a modified, quote-unquote modified Boston Crab, so
yeah.
Shit happens, you adapt, and then at least AJ gave two Styles Clashes afterwards to make up for it, so.
Yep.
I think night one and two on par with one another. Some people might say night two was better than night one, but they felt kind of... different but kind of the same, but you know, I think night two definitely had the best match, ACH and Kenny Omega. I mean, you guys probably said a lot about that match already.
Yeah, we said, like, so on night two, it's you either liked ACH and Kenny Omega because of the style that, because it wasn't, the wrestling was great and fun, but also that nostalgia with bringing the Stone Cold
Rest. Right, and I think this goes, I was talking to, someone in the audience this weekend talking about how he compares stand-up comedy to wrestling and how the ability to adapt is something really, you know, really, you really need that in wrestling to adapt to the crowd.
Yeah, something doesn't go right.
And you see that a lot in PWG, and then what happened this weekend with ACH and Kenny Omega was a prime example of taking the crowd and adapting and just turning it into something special, because I mean, there's no way a match like that can happen unless you got a guy dressed like Stone Cold coming to the crowd two nights in a row. I mean,
right.
So I mean,
three nights in a row.
Excuse me. He was still dressed like Stone Cold this week.
He really was. He really got the most out of that vest. And kudos to him. I mean, hey.
Yeah.
Not everyone could pull it off.
And so yeah.
But we also said that was the more entertaining match, but the best wrestling match for night two was the one right before with Cole and Sabre Jr. And we already talked about
right.
it. But that's on night two. Those are the two matches I think people are going to be talking about
for sure.
Yeah. And the rest were great too. But still, those two just man.
Yeah, and I think we got to give some love to Drew Gulak for that match with Kyle O'Reilly. That was some great stuff. Those headbutts were very scary, but. It seemed like he wanted to go in, first match in PWG. Your first match in PWG is with the world champion. You got to go all out. So Drew Gulak really knows how to control the crowd, and he really did a good job this weekend. And he really, he actually made the 10-man tag a little more fun, being serious in it.
Yeah.
So that's a preview for what's to come in the 10-man tag. So.
Yes, but I think it worked. It brought out a different... Because we all know Kyle O'Reilly is very technically sound, but in this match with Drew Gulak, he really could show it.
Right.
You know, because in Ring of Honor, you know, he's in tag matches a lot of the time. He can't always do that. So I think here he's able to bring a little bit more focus to it.
Right.
So, yeah. Anything else for night one, night two, Brian?
That's about it. Like we said before, the pacing night two is more like a G1 show with like 10-15 minute sprints, with night one taking it slow in some of the matches, but definitely worth checking out on both shows. And night three, well, that's a whole different story.
Yeah, let's get into this, guys. Night three, we had everything. We saw the worst referee in PWG history. I kid you not. The fans, and we'll get into why, because the first match, it was basically fucked up. There's no other way to say it. We also saw a very impromptu surprise. I don't want to say the end of a PWG career, because you never know, but
right.
A very emotional moment with the return, surprise return, really, of Willie Mack. We saw him earlier in the day, and you know what? We were kind of thinking, you know what? He's maybe visiting friends. We didn't really want to put that out there on Twitter, just because if it came to nothing, then there would have been no point. Unlike, you know, with Human Tornado, you kind of knew he would be involved in some way. And obviously he was on night one. But I think that this show tonight was just a real big surprise for everyone. We also saw some really great wrestling, particularly from people that, you know, were making their first day, you know, not their debuts, obviously, because they were there for night one, night two, but still very fresh to the crowd's mind. And then guys like Trevor Lee, I think, if not Zack Sabre Jr., guys, Trevor Lee is really showing that he's going to be the future of any promotion. And I don't understand why some promotions are booking him, but they need to get on that. They need to fix that right away. We also saw, obviously, the winner of the Battle of Los Angeles tournament. But I think the best way to do this, maybe run down the results, have Brian do that, and then just give overall thoughts. Because if we break down every single match, this could go crazy.
Yeah, there was a lot.
I mean, I think we should probably at least try to hit the major points. Yeah, I think we have to really start with Gargano and Candice LeRae and sort of get into the specifics of what happened with this match.
And hopefully his nose isn't broken.
Poor Gargano, he keeps breaking his nose. It keeps happening everywhere. But this sort of was a bad omen for the rest of the night because poor Gargano and Candice were doing a really good match, I thought. And Gargano hit the Hurts donut, and he got the 3 count. Unfortunately, so we thought he apparently got a 2 count, but apparently it was also 3. So Justin Voorhees messed the count up, so sort of got the night off to a bit of a rough start. So I thought, I mean, it's tough to say it was the referee's fault, but if the shoulders are down, you've got to count 3 at a certain point. And in indie wrestling, that's not always the most easy thing to do. But this was sort of a rough start, and the sad part is that these two are working really hard. These two are going to have a match in AIW next week, so this was a bit of a preview of that. But you know, I can totally understand why Gargano won here. He's a top flight competitor in independent wrestling, and putting Candice over here, I'm not sure would have made the most sense, even though I think part of me also wanted to see what Candice making a deep run would look like. So this is a fun match, but obviously the finish was a disaster.
Yeah, that finish was, it really just angered the crowd because that referee kept getting heat the whole night, especially since he was the referee in the AJ Styles Roderick Strong match, which we'll get into later on. But yeah, this match was going good up until the end, and I guess they're going to probably, you know, tweak it a little bit and go to AEW next week and probably add a little more to it. But, yeah, there were some really, like, hard spots, especially when Candice, there was a spot in the corner where Candice's head was driven into the top turnbuckle, but it looked like she hit some of the metal part as well and was just totally out of it, it looked like. So, yeah, we all know Candice is a tough girl. So, yeah, I mean, it was a great match and all, and I think, I don't know, I would have booked Roderick Strong against Candice, but that would have just me, but because I think it would have been better if Roderick Strong would have went in there and killed Candice, and that would have got Roderick Strong a lot more heat, but you know, what can you do? But
we'll get into the Roderick Strong stuff in a little bit, because I think I agree with you, there was sort of a better way of doing this. The next 3 matches, I think, were all sort of similar quality. Ricochet defeated TJ Perkins with the Benadriller. Not too much to say. I think this was pretty good. Trevor Lee versus Michael Elgin was a very good match. Pretty much an upset. Trevor Lee is the new Mr. Small Package. He defeated Kevin Steen with it at 11. Defeated Michael Elgin with it tonight. So obviously, regardless of what happened the rest of the tournament, Trevor Lee is sort of a made man in PWG. When you beat Kevin Steen and Michael Elgin in back-to-back months, that is huge.
And him getting that German career on Elgin was crazy.
Yeah. Trevor Lee definitely had a great tournament, a great follow-up to everything that's happened in 11. So I think PWG, we're going to sort of get into the critiques of the booking later, but I think they are approaching the Trevor Lee thing about as well as possible because they're really putting him in situations where he can excel. They're bringing him along quickly so that, you know, realistically, this is a guy you could give a PWG title match to in, you know, maybe less than a year, and it's not going to seem totally out of place based on the people he's beaten. Kenny Omega defeated Matt Sydal with the electric chair driver. That's the Kreutz Wrath. That was a Kreutz Wrath. That was the other move.
Kreutz Wrath is more of the German. This was more of the, I guess, sort of like a Rubik's Cube, kind of like, yeah. I think Tyler Black used to do that.
Doesn't he call it an Omega Driver? Is that what he calls it?
No.
I'm not sure, okay. But it was
That's
pretty disgusting.
That's what Chuck Taylor does. It was pretty
disgusting, especially when he hit it from that angle. So.
But yeah, I thought all 3 matches were good, but you know, I would say like 3.25 star range. Nothing spectacular.
Yeah, especially with that Kenny Omega Matt Sydal match, it seemed like almost 70-30 at times that, you know, Kenny Omega was just having the upper hand. It seemed like Matt Sydal was playing the underdog in both his matches with Kenny Omega and Chris Hero. So I guess he's just playing that small role like he used to when he was back in the Indies in 2006 and 2007. So we'll see where he goes from there, because Matt Sydal is still trying to get his ring rust.
And he's reborn.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I laughed.
I see what you did there, or what they did there.
Or Matt Sydal did there.
He's been watching his Doink tapes from 1994 ECW.
He does have a free subscription to the WWE Network, from what I understand, so that's very conceivable.
Still?
Yeah, apparently. That's what he said in his WWN interview, anyway. Roderick Strong defeated AJ Styles in a match that was not without controversy. And for the most part, this was a good match. AJ Styles and Roderick Strong have very good chemistry. They've had a number of matches. Chris, Ari, and the other Chris, Mikio, they discussed a Roderick Strong-AJ Styles match from 2005's Fate of an Angel, which was very good. Yep. They had a really good match back in Nashville for Ring of Honor. And AJ Styles' first Ring of Honor match in some 9 years. So there was a lot of expectations going into this, you know, because of how good these two are. And because AJ Styles is the IWGP champion, I had a bad feeling that we were going to get a fuck finish.
I think we all did.
So I think we all sort of figured that this was going to happen, but just the way that this was done was pretty much as poorly executed as you could have it. So there was the ref bump, which was, of course, the only referee bump of the entire weekend.
And not to mention, it was also the same ref that basically fucked up the finish in the first match, so the fans weren't exactly happy.
So they didn't like Justin Voorhees anyway, so chairs were thrown in the ring. AJ Styles doesn't even swing a chair.
The ref sees him.
The ref sees him with a chair and then just disqualifies him.
Right.
And which was a bad, just a terrible finish. And on a weekend like this, this is the finish you should be avoiding at all costs, because it doesn't really help anyone. You know, Roderick Strong looks weak going into the semifinals. AJ Styles doesn't really look all that great, and the poor referee just is booked to look like a complete moron.
And for anyone trying to defend this, thinking that it was the same as what Eddie Guerrero did, this was nowhere near that level of entertaining or.
PWG does not. I mean, they go for ha-has, but not in a match like this.
And not to mention the fact they haven't done a DQ finish in about 4 or 5 years, maybe even longer. It was ridiculous. Whatever. Really disappointing. I mean, good match, disappointing ending. Really soured like a lot of the crowd, but. Politics, man. What can you do? Politics, man. So, I mean, at least Roderick Strong was not, you know, knocked on his neck, or not the top of his head with a Styles class. Luckily.
So in a sense, you could say this was actually turned out better. By the way, AJ Styles has had some of the worst finishes of the entire year. Let's go back to the beginning of the year with Roderick Strong and almost breaking his neck. Mm-hmm. You had the DQ finishes in Dreamwave with Christian Rose, Drew Gulak in CZW. You know, at last night's PWG Bowl, or no, it was two nights ago, the Brian Myers thing happened, and then tonight, so the politics that are involved with him being New Japan and sort of being involved with them has really hurt the quality of his matches and sort of led to some disappointing finishes. And, you know, I walked away from this thinking, if this is how AJ Styles had to go out, then what was the point in even bringing him in for two nights? And, you know, this is not someone who is going to cost you $500 plus trans. This is a guy who's pretty expensive to bring in. And, you know, I understand what they were going for with this all-star cast of independent wrestlers, but, you know, I can't help but think that there was a better way of doing this by, you know, booking somebody else or just trying to avoid this at all costs, or, you know, maybe even doing like a time limit draw of some sort in the first round or the quarterfinals, just so you can avoid something like this.
Right. It was just, it is what it is. It was disappointing, but, you know. Maybe we'll see AJ Styles again soon, probably for an All-Star weekend. I don't see AJ Styles like challenging for a title at all. WWG, it'd be almost impossible at this point just because of the politics involved. So, I mean, it was great to see him. He was probably the most over guy in the building in night one. I mean, everyone is wearing these Bullet Club T-shirts all weekend. Everyone's two-sweeting each other, but you got to book a good finish with AJ Styles, man. But C'est la vie.
I think the best match of the quarterfinals was next with Kyle O'Reilly and Zack Sabre Jr. This is a very good technical match. I think the crowd sort of had to gather themselves back into this based on what happened in the previous finish. So the crowd wasn't into this as much as you might think. And plus, you know, this was the sixth match of six before intermission. So the crowd's pretty exhausted. You know, people were waiting hours in line before the show out in the hot sun. You know, we're 2 hours into this show. So I definitely think there was some burnout here.
Also, there's not as much to go up against. So, like, the night before with Adam Cole, there's a lot to play off of there. With Kyle O'Reilly, you're not going to really care against
it. It's split
them.
More 50-50, yeah. So this was a tough match, but I still thought it was very good. I think the Adam Cole match was actually better than this one. I think a lot of people sort of feel similarly, but
that's probably just because of the heat, because this one didn't really have a natural heel to it, so it was definitely a 50-50 match, but they busted out some sick kicks, some sick submissions.
The reversals were crazy.
Exactly.
So this is definitely one that I want to go back and watch again on DVD and sort of get a better idea, sort of separated away from the emotional situation that took place the match before. This is definitely one I want to check out again.
I know, I'm going to have to. And Brian, you probably will too, because of the guy sitting in the front.
There's a guy with a belt that I yelled at a fan, which I never do that, but man, that guy really pissed me off.
Yeah, he's known for that. The champ is standing in
fucking
front of
Californians, man. I gotta tell you. After the match, Roderick Strong attacked Kyle O'Reilly and knocked him out of the tournament. Roderick Strong hit the Orange Crush backbreaker into the chairs.
Two chairs set up, you know, next to each other.
He hit poor Rick Knox, and I think he legitimately injured him because Knox came out the rest of the night.
And he hit Excalibur
with a wrap around his left arm, and Excalibur got hit with a chair, and Kyle O'Reilly was knocked out of the tournament, and Roderick Strong, who attacked his opponent, was given a bye to the finals in one of the best bits of storytelling this side of I don't know what, but no, this is bad. This is very, very bad. It makes no sense, and I think the booking of Roderick Strong in this tournament, specifically on night three, was very problematic. You look at the way that he advanced into the semifinals against AJ Styles, and now he gets into the finals because of a bye
that
O'Reilly's taken out that he caused. He caused his own bye. So
he somehow knew that he was going to face Kyle O'Reilly in the semifinals.
I mean, I don't know if it was said on commentary who was going to face who, but it was really strange and a very uncharacteristic booking for PWG, I think, in these two matches. And it sent everybody going into intermission, I think, a little sour.
For sure. But I will say this. In PWG, it seems like unless you're the Young Bucks or Adam Cole, you're an automatic face that's just going to cheer like crazy. So I do give PWG credit for actually creating a heel that, you know, everyone is in the building is hating right now, but he's a heel that, you know, had some botched finishes and screwed his way into the finals. So, I mean, I guess that's one way to do it, you know, but I mean, at least PWG has, like, a singular heel that they can focus on now, too, as opposed to just focusing on, you know, Mount Rushmore as the go-to.
But I guess I don't see how these matches help build up to a match with Kyle O'Reilly, because Roderick Strong, you know, he beat AJ Styles because of a shitty disqualification. He beat up an injured Kyle O'Reilly after the match. I mean, yes, he earned the number one contendership over Adam Cole, and that was clean, and that was fine, but I guess I don't see how the booking of tonight's, and you know, we can get into the finals in a moment here, but I don't think the booking tonight makes me excited. Oh, I want to see Kyle O'Reilly kick Roderick Strong's ass now because of, you know, Roderick Strong's
basically
strong heel.
Essentially a Roderick Strong already lost, so even though he didn't lose, he still lost in the match.
They
so.
Did a cop out, which we'll get to in a second,
right? Which was kind of confusing.
So a much needed intermission took place after that, and then we had the Young Bucks and Adam Cole defeating ECH Chris Sabin and Brian Myers. I pointed this out to Brian. Brian Myers and Chris Sabin did not do very much in this match at all. It's basically the ACH show. The Mount Rushmore did get a victory here, as was expected, because they're still one of the top heel groups. ACH was awesome. He did some crowd surfing, and then he got super kicked while in the crowd surf.
And, that was amazing.
That was one of the highlights. Before the bell even rang, though, the ring announcer, who got super kicked in the face yesterday.
Angelo Trinidad.
Poor Angelo Trinidad. Angelo Trinidad got a measure of revenge tonight. As the Bucks went for a super kick, they hit Cole, and then Mr. Trinidad clotheslined the Young Bucks, gave a crotch chop to both of them, and then he hugged Rick Knox in a symbolic gesture. So good for him, you know.
And Rick Knox also kind of, he almost got the pin on Brian Myers. Not gonna lie, that could have been the match.
It could have very well been three if Justin Voorhees was in the ring. It would have been a three count.
Yeah, it seems to be Rick Knox is like he's always somehow pinning wrestlers in matches in PWG somehow. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind if one day they just booked the Young Bucks against Rick Knox and D'Angelo Trinidad against Angelo Trinidad. So I think the Bucks can actually carry the actual referee and announcer to a good match in PWG.
I mean, they have the best matches on every show, it seems like. So no matter what, I mean, these guys are just so good at what they do.
Right.
And I don't know, I'm sort of a mixed feeling on Brian Myers. You know, his match with AJ Styles, obviously the finish wasn't that great. You know, there's going to be an adjustment period for him. So, you know, they may want to consider bringing him back, but... You know, based on this weekend, he didn't seem all that impressive in this match. Like I said, ACH did most of the work. You know, Chris Sabin's a guy who sort of has an established name, so you may see him in PWG occasionally, but I don't know. Brian Myers is sort of a question mark to me.
Yeah, he's at least Trent, you know, adapted really well off the bat when he came in. Brian Myers seems to be... I don't know, he'll take it slow. Like, in the match with AJ, he'll take it a little slow, and then he'll do some build up to some spots. But then when he builds up to the spot, he can't really execute the spot because he's not used to executing high spots like that. So I think he's just got to get used to that indie style. But I'd just like to mention that ACH, Chris Sabin, and Brian Myers was not the only random team of the night. there was a lot of random teams tonight. So
so the two semifinals were great. You know, I think, again, this might get a little bit lost in the shuffle here with some of the questionable booking, but I thought Johnny Gargano and Trevor Lee was great. You know, like I said, Trevor Lee was made to look like a superstar this entire weekend. You know, these two guys exchanged finishers, and, you know, even in a loss, I thought Trevor Lee came off very well. Johnny Gargano is one of the best workers in the independent scene, and for him to sort of get into the finals is a big deal. And, you know, Trevor Lee, Kevin Steen, Cedric Alexander, Michael Elgin, Johnny Gargano, that is quite the Rolodex of people. And Trevor Lee was also, of course, involved in a six-man with Steen and the Young Bucks. So this is a huge weekend for him, and he capped it off with a really great semifinal match. And then Kenny Omega did not make it to the finals. He was not able to get his second bowl of victory, as Ricochet defeated Kenny Omega in a battle of Dragon Gate versus DDT.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this is very, very good. And, yeah, I was very impressed. I was surprised that the semifinals of a tournament like this in this format usually suffer the most, but I thought these two semifinals were really good.
Yeah, especially since they got a lot of time, so it didn't seem rushed or anything like that. So
it should be mentioned also, and Brian, you can go into more detail about this, Trevor Lee, several times in his matches, attempted a package pile driver, obviously alluding to the win he has over Kevin Steen.
Right.
And if you want to put it this way, sending Steen out of the quote-unquote territory. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, originally my theory was that somehow everything would come full circle, since it was 1 year ago that Mount Rushmore came together. And now that they're down to three, you got to make it four again. So I was thinking Trevor Lee's going to be that young guy that we're going to groom and put him in the group and make him the young guy of the group, kind of like the Lex Luger and the Barry Windham of the Four Horsemen. But once the semifinals hit and then he tapped out to the Gargano escape, I was just like, oh, okay, I guess they're going with a different route. Because it was the Michael Elgin match where he did attempt the package pile driver, and it got me thinking, okay, so maybe it'll be Trevor Lee in the final winning Bola with the package pile driver, which was what I would have booked, but it didn't happen, obviously. But it just came off really well, and... I think they're building towards a big match where he does hit the package pile driver, alluding to his big win against Kevin Steen, and then cementing a big win in his career once he does hit it. Maybe against the world champion, I don't know, but they're definitely building up to a moment where Trevor Lee does hit that package pile driver. Against who, I don't know, but it will mean something.
Right, so let's also talk about the 10-man tag, which was special for very many reasons. Brian, you alluded to it already, so why don't you call it out? The most random teams ever in a PWG show?
I mean, we had some random tag matches in IWE Mid-South over the years, Chikara throughout the years, but let's just go over the teams because it's going to be almost impossible to almost impossible to read out and follow if you're not, like, paying attention. Chris Hero, Joey Ryan, Chuck Taylor, Rich Swann, and Willie Mack. That's right, Willie Mack, who wasn't even in the tournament, against Drew Gulak, Biff Busick, Cedric Alexander, Bobby Fish, and Tommaso Ciampa. You got that, everybody? And, I mean, it was almost impossible to, like, figure out who was on the same team. I mean, once, like, halfway through, you kind of, you know, got used to who's on whose team. But this was one of the most craziest, ridiculous, awesome matches that I've ever seen live. It was like a Chikara multi-tag match with all the chicanery or whatever, but just turned up to a PG-13.
There was a level. Dance contest to start.
To Rich start. Swann.
I will never think of Jump On It in the same way ever again.
Rich Swann... Rich got Swann loves everybody to dance. He got the
he got Tommaso Ciampa to dance, people.
Tommaso Ciampa was dancing. Bobby Fish was dancing. So there was a dance contest. And then there was in Chikara, when Darren Corbin wrestles, and the ECW WWF match from King of Trios 2012 Night 1 featured slow-mo, and basically what that means is that guys, you know, they literally slow it down. And Chuck Taylor yelled "slow it down" at one point, and that's exactly what happened. And I've had the opportunity to see so many of these live, and this was so great. I mean, all 10 of these guys did a great job. Bobby Fish wanted nothing to do with any of this chicanery, but in Bobby Fish's character, I think it made a lot of sense that he would be the one to sort of break it up and, you know, stop all the shenanigans. But everybody, the crowd, poor Justin Voorhees, everybody was playing along. And given how late in the show it was pretty amazing to see the crowd just play along to it. They got it right away, which... obviously, you know, that's tough because you don't know who in that crowd is, you know, are they wrestling fans? Do they even know what slow-mo means? And, you know, they got it right away, and it came across really well.
Yeah, I guess it was a good 5 minutes, man, but it was so awesome to see everyone just playing along, you know what I mean? It was like going to an improv comedy show and just having that one of those improv games where the crowd is interacting with the stage, and it was just such a... wow, man, like a really, a crowd connecting with the wrestlers, man. It was just so amazing to watch. And just everyone, we were all slowing down, you know. We were like, I mean, there was a "This is awesome" chant in the slowest.
Which always happens in these matches.
This is awesome.
I wonder if Excalibur, that's the only mystery, was Excalibur doing it on commentary as well. I hope he played along, too. Incredibly, Rich Swann got the finish in... I don't think people even remembered the finish. Right. If I were to go up to 100 people who saw the match, they probably wouldn't even remember who won. Because of everything that happened afterwards, it was announced that Willie Mack is going to soon be a citizen of Orlando, Florida. If you know what's in Orlando, Florida, it's likely that Willie Mack will be in a certain major company's developmental system.
Sweet, he's going to be in Impact. That's awesome.
They don't run in Orlando anymore, Chris. And, they're gonna be dead very soon. And
3 months, man. We got
look when AJ Styles is even encouraging the "fuck TNA" chants. That tells you everything you need to know about the state of that company. So Willie Mack gave a very emotional speech, and you know he's sort of been a guy who is an underdog and literally in life. With his mom passing away at the age of 14, you know, starting out in the crowd at the old Sweatbox, and now he is going to be going into WWE. He never got that big PWG run, either in a tag team or as a singles wrestler, which is very, very unfortunate, I think. But, you know, I think everybody in that ring, all the other 10 people, Trent Barreto was in the ring as well. He became involved in the match at one point. Everybody seemed genuinely happy for him, and there were a lot of tears flowing from even guys like Joey Ryan, and I saw Rick Knox, and just a lot of happiness for Willie Mack.
Yeah. And Tommaso Ciampa hugged people.
Yeah, he was right. Nice. Hugging people. And Ciampa's gonna hug you. FYI, Bailey. I mean, this totally came out of nowhere, you know what I mean? Like, this was like a special treat that really cemented the weekend as a whole, I think, because this whole weekend is kind of legendary. It's going to be infamous years from now, I think. And then with Willie Max, I mean, that whole 10-man tag in general was just something legendary within itself, and then the whole speech afterward, the unexpected emotion coming out of it. I mean, we all thought it was just some random 10-man tag.
Right.
Up until the end, and then Joey Ryan getting on the mic and saying Willie Mack was going, so... I mean, it was really crazy. I mean, totally unexpected, really emotional, and...
It got
really
musty. Memorable.
Hey, you know...
So then, to end the night, of course, I mean, I don't even know how you follow that up, but we had the final round. It was a three-way, not an elimination match.
Which really confused the hell out of all of us, or at least most of the crowd.
I mean, so for those who don't remember, 2006-2007 was the exact same format with 24 men, three-way in the finals, and both of those matches were done under elimination rules. This match, because they didn't want Roderick Strong to lose, was not an elimination match. So
the crowd was confused.
Half the crowd cheered when Ricochet pinned Gargano. The other half didn't know what to do. So you had the anticlimactic finish. It was also anticlimactic because Ricochet actually won with the 630, which had been kicked out of earlier in the night. So, it's very strange. Ricochet had won his two matches this night with the Benadryler, and then in this one, he won with the 630. So, it came across very anticlimactic, and it's just unfortunate because, you know, this has the potential to be, you know, one of the best tournaments in the history of independent wrestling. And I think what you ended up with was a final that was good, but... it was missing a lot for it to sort of be something regarded as special. And, you know, I think it goes without saying, Ricochet has had an incredible year winning the Open the Freedom Gate title, the Open the Dream Gate title, the Best of the Super Juniors, and, you know, now Bola sort of cements his status as one of the best wrestlers of 2014. But it's just unfortunate that this wasn't celebrated as much as it should have been.
Yeah, it was just a lot of confusion. Because, I mean, people were like, okay, why are you breaking up the pinfall if it's a three-way elimination, right?
Specifically, that was me yelling.
But there was other people, too, because we were just as confused, you know? So, maybe they did say it on the PA and we just didn't hear, but the PA system in the PWG, you know, it's not that great, so it's always hard to hear anyway. But I wish they would have made it more clear in the fine print that it was going to be... Because I was under the assumption it was elimination rules like the previous years, so...
I mean, there should have been brackets for this tournament, and it should have been made clear from the get-go.
Especially since that fake lineup that was released this morning, which was actually like on Wrestling Observer Radio this morning. I don't know where Mike Sempervivi got it from, but it was completely off. Obviously,
I mean, every match was completely wrong.
So yeah,
I mean, maybe Super Dragon changed it, but you know, there was a rumored lineup.
I think if he did change it, he changed it for the better. But I don't know. But this final was, it was good, it's just, you know, confusing at the end, and, you know, Ricochet has had a great year, but I don't know, it seems like I think you can get more out of Trevor Lee right now than Ricochet in terms of, a top guy.
Cause Kyle O'Reilly and Ricochet, I think it's money. I mean,
they were going to do that anyway, even if he didn't win Bola, because that seems like that's where they're going to go as soon as Kyle O'Reilly.
I think it makes a lot of sense just based on the year that he's had, the quality of the matches that he's had. It's tough for me to argue against Ricochet at this point. You know, I think Trevor Lee's a guy that I think it might be a little bit too soon. I think if you push Trevor Lee this hard, then it's sort of going to be like that Young Bucks syndrome back at like 08 and 09 when you're just, you know, you're stuffing a guy down everybody's throat. So I could see the argument for not making for that reason. So, and plus Trevor Lee's, you know, he's 20 years old at this point. He's going to be in a lot of bolas. There's going to be ample opportunities to give him opportunities. And, you know, he's beaten Steen, he's beaten Elgin, he had a great match with Gargano, so Trevor Lee's spot, I feel like, is secure, and he's probably the favorite to win next year, if nothing else.
Right.
I mean, but Ricochet, another crowning achievement in his career, and he's probably going to be wrestling Kyle O'Reilly in December, with Roderick Strong getting the next title shot in October.
Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if they did in October, actually, just to... I don't know. I mean, we'll see where it goes from there, but that's definitely like the three-way feud at the top right now for the belt, so.
I don't know. I mean, it was just very frustrating because at the end of the night, you sort of think about it, AJ Styles basically lost on a terrible disqualification. Kyle O'Reilly was never actually eliminated, and Roderick Strong wasn't pinned. So, I mean, the booking, I think, sort of tainted the way that Ricochet's victory came off, and it's very unfortunate because, you know, winning this tournament is a big deal. This is like winning the 04 TPI or, you know, winning another major independent wrestling tournament. You know, of the 24 people selected for this tournament, for Ricochet to be the winner is a huge deal, and to sort of have that taint across it, I don't know, it bothers me.
Well, I mean, we'll see where it goes from here, you know. I guess, you know, the PWG committee, booking committee, whatever you want to call it, has got a plan. So, I mean, they must see something in Ricochet and Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly at the top right now. So, let's see where it goes. Maybe, I don't know if they'll do another three-way match with those three or something.
I hope not, because I don't think three-ways work. Just as a general rule, I don't think that they come off very well. And I would much prefer two one-on-one matches.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see where, you know, I think they're building towards a big All-Star weekend at the end with something going on between those three, so we'll see where it goes there. But yeah, that was the weekend, man. This was definitely the longest show out of the three. I mean, we all thought, I mean, they wanted to start at 5, but,
you know. It started at 6.
And
it went 4.5 hours.
We got out at 10:30. I mean, our voices are all out of it. We're all tired, but... It was quite the weekend, guys. I mean, you know, there hasn't been a weekend like this in quite some time in indie wrestling, I think, you know. Probably since that, what, some of the original TPIs, you know.
The first two nights weren't that long. I mean, the third night was the one that really felt like a TBI. Yeah. And guys, I got to tell you, I think we're gonna enjoy these shows looking back years from now more than people who spent $75 when they look back at King of Trios 2014. So at least we got that going for us.
Ooh, he said it.
Fired.
He said it.
Shot fired.
I mean, guys, I know Dr. Cube wasn't in the 2014 BOLA. But I think we made out with the winner's share of the purse, so to speak.
For sure.
Probably. So, I mean, I guess the final question is, and I think, Drum, you and I said it this whole weekend, but Brian, blind buys for night one, night two, and night three?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, this is going to go down as probably one of the more notorious wrestling tournaments of all time, considering all the talent involved, where the talent that is involved is going to be years from now. I mean, if you look at it, this was like... You know, PWG in the last 10 years all combined in the last, you know, three nights. You got AJ Styles coming back. You had Christopher Daniels and Craig Kazarian coming back. There were the originals. Joey Ryan was there this weekend. And then you had, like, a farewell for Willie Mack, which is, like, a previous chapter in the last 3 years.
But without Taro, it's really not.
He was there. I just... Okay, Taro was there.
He was there in spirit.
He was there in spirit. But, yeah, it was just... it seemed like the last 10 years of PWG just kind of... built up to this, you know, this weekend, and...
No Baby Slim?
Oh, right.
No Baby Slim.
Is he even wrestling anymore? I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, so quite the weekend, right, guys? I mean...
Absolutely.
We're going to go to bed very shortly.
Right.
An enjoyable weekend and lots of good times. So, as always, thanks, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate it. Everyone retweeting all the stuff that you guys did for us this week and all the hits. And, yeah, thank you very much. We'll be back next week to our regular schedules, hopefully, maybe after a few days of sleep.
Twitter.com/PWPonderings is the place to find all results. You know, we tweeted, of course, PWG. Whenever I'm at AEW, I certainly tweet out results. And whenever we have the opportunity to do so for Ring of Honor or AIW, we do that as well. Twitter.com/JeromePWPEditor is the place to find me. When you go to PWPonderings.com, make sure you click on the High Spots link. You can buy all of the previous Battle of Los Angeleses, and you'll be able to to buy the 2014 version. If you're going to do that, please use our link so that we get a small kickback. Amazon, WWE Shop, and all of our other advertisers, please make sure you click those links and support Pro Wrestling Ponderings when you can. Brian, get your shit in as well.
It's on Twitter, Brian DeBrain. I've been doing all the, you know, the Sin City PWG graphic designs you've been seeing out there with all those banners. Thank you for all the compliments this weekend, all the fans that I, you know, interacted with, and, you know, all the compliments about the my graphic design work. It really means a lot. We're not going to mention the fans, because it doesn't matter. I'm cool with it. No one's going to know what it means anyway when I'm talking about with this right now. You know, if you need some graphic design work done, hit me up. I did some for Des Delgadillo. Shout out to Des Delgadillo from Night 2. Awesome. Thank you for the extra ticket, Mike. My buddy, thanks you. Quite the weekend hanging out with all these people. It was almost like all the Smart Mark All-Stars from Twitter came together this weekend. So all just hanging out and bitching about wrestling with each other. So
that's it. Brian even got to take a tour of Iran, everybody.
I took multiple tours of Iran, man. I mean, everyone was just coming up to me and saying, hey, let's go to Iran right now. Okay.
There you go. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Tell your friends. Share it around. And we'll talk to you again real soon.
All night long.
All night.